From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. We're celebrating the holidays by celebrating great American music with an encore presentation of our series on American popular song. Coming up, a tribute to lyricist Dorothy Fields. She co-wrote I'm in the Mood for Love, On the Sunny Side of the Street, I Can't Give You Anything But Love, The Way You Look Tonight, Exactly Like You, A Fine Romance, and Big Spender. Dave Frischberg and Rebecca Kilgore will perform some of Fields' songs. We'll talk about Fields' life with her biographer, her lyrics with a song historian, and her working method with her last songwriting partner, Cy Coleman. A tribute to Dorothy Fields on today's Fresh Air. First, the news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Mac Lee. A man accused of taking a bomb aboard an American Airlines flight from Paris to Miami was in federal court in Boston today. From member station WBUR in Boston, Rachel Gottbaum reports.
The man authorities are calling Richard Reed, the name on his British passport, appeared in court, his hands and feet shackled. He told the judge he needed a lawyer. The 28-year-old man, who French police say is actually named Tariq Raja and is of Sri Lankan descent, is being charged by U.S. federal prosecutors of assaulting flight attendants on an American Airlines flight from Paris that was diverted to Boston. Authorities say he tried to ignite explosives hidden in his sneakers, but passengers and crew were able to subdue him. Charles Prouty is a special agent with the FBI.
I think we could all conclude that there was that it would have resulted in significant damage, and we probably did avert a major disaster.
The suspect will appear in court again Friday for a bail hearing. For NPR News, I'm Rachel Gottbaum in Boston.
U.S. officials say they have not found anything to link the airline explosive suspect to Osama bin Laden. A government official in Washington says investigators have not found any clues that tie the man to the al-Qaeda network. Afghan militia commanders say additional U.S. soldiers are not needed to clean out the caves of Tora Bora, but more American troops could soon be in the area to search those caves. U.S. officials say they could contain valuable information that might lead to the whereabouts of Osama bin Laden or plans for future terrorist attacks. Afghan officials say they have found computers, radios, and large amounts of ammunition. They say their soldiers are doing a good job of clearing away debris. The Air Force has given clearance for C-141 transport planes to fly again after determining that a mishap involving one of the jets is not symptomatic of a larger problem. NPR's Scott Horsley reports.
The Air Force had grounded its fleet of C-141 Starlifters after a wing on one of the planes collapsed during refueling at a Memphis airport Friday night. Two airmen suffered minor injuries in that accident, which also resulted in a 9,000-gallon fuel spill. Investigators are still trying to figure out just what caused the mishap in Memphis, but a team of engineers has determined the problem was unique to that airplane. That cleared the way for the other 98 Starlifters in the fleet to return to service. The Air Force has been using C-141 since the 1960s to move troops and materiel throughout the world. The plane is being phased out, however, in favor of bigger, more modern C-17s, and the Starlifter has not been used in Afghanistan. The last C-141 is expected to be replaced within 5 years. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
Despite international pressure, Israel prevented PLO leader Yasser Arafat from celebrating Christmas in Bethlehem. Since 1995, Arafat has made his annual trip to Bethlehem for Christmas Eve midnight mass. Israel says it blocked Arafat's visit because the Palestinian leader did not arrest the assassins of an Israeli cabinet minister. On Wall Street, the Dow Jones closed down a fraction of a point to 10,035. This is NPR News. The World Health Organization is continuing to investigate an outbreak of the deadly Ebola virus in Central Africa. NPR's Joanne Silberner has more in this report.
The WHO is reporting a total of 27 cases, 12 confirmed by laboratory analysis and 15 diagnosed in the field. 18 people have died so far. The victims are all from Gabon or neighboring villages in the Republic of the Congo. Ebola is a deadly disease with no cure that breaks out periodically in jungle areas. It causes bleeding, vomiting, and diarrhea. It's spread by ritual body washing. It can be blocked by masks and gloves. An international team is investigating 203 contacts of the people who've contracted the disease. They anticipate there may be more cases. The outbreak delayed elections in the affected area of Gabon. By Ebola standards, it's a relatively small outbreak so far. Last year, the Ebola virus killed more than 200 people in Uganda. Joanne Solberner, NPR News, Washington.
Several senators want the Federal Trade Commission to investigate consumer complaints in the collapse of energy giant Enron. They want to know why executives were allowed to cash out their stock, while other employees were forced to hold on to declining shares. Allegations of insider trading and pension law violations are already being investigated by the Securities and Exchange Commission and the Justice and Labor Departments. The FTC has indicated it is considering a probe into possible violations of consumer protection laws, possibly beginning in January. Christmas carols and a rousing chorus of God Bless America were heard as U.S. troops observed Christmas in the Afghan town of Kandahar. In the northern city of Mazar-e-Sharif, a U.S. chaplain was flown in to lead a Christmas worship service. The 30-minute service ended with silent night. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from the NPR online shop, offering a variety of unique NPR-related merchandise on the web at npr.org.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Dorothy Fields wrote some of the most clever and sparkling lyrics in the American Popular Songbook. Her songs include I Can't Give You Anything But Love, I'm in the Mood for Love, Don't Blame Me, Exactly Like You, I Won't Dance, A Fine Romance, The Way You Look Tonight, Big Spender, and If My Friends Could See Me Now. Fields' biographer, Deborah Grace Weiner, describes her as the only woman songwriter to achieve an equal stature among the top echelon male writers who drove pop and show music. Her career started in the 20s when she wrote songs performed by Duke Ellington at the Cotton Club of Harlem. When Fields died in 1974, she had a new show on Broadway, Seesaw, a follow-up with composer Cy Coleman to their hit show Sweet Charity. Along the way, she collaborated with Jimmy McHugh and Jerome Kern, wrote for Bill Bojangles Robinson, Fred Astaire, and Ginger Rogers, and she wrote the librettos for many musicals, including Annie Get Your Gun. As part of our series on American Popular Song, we dedicate today's show to the life and lyrics of Dorothy Fields. Our guest performers are pianist and songwriter Dave Frischberg, that's Dave at the piano now, and singer Rebecca Kilgore. Welcome, Dave, Becky, to Fresh Air.
Hi, Terry.
Thank you.
Let's start with one of Dorothy Fields' early and most enduring songs, The Sunny Side of the Street. It was written in 1930. The music is by Jimmy McHugh. Would you play it for us?
Sure.
You bet.
Grab your coat and get your hat. Leave your worry on the doorstep. Just direct your feet to the sunny side of the street. Can't you hear a pit-a-pat? And that happy tune is your step. Life can be so sweet on the sunny side of the street. I used to walk in the shade with those blue on parade, but now I'm not afraid. This rover crossed over. If I never have a cent, then I'll be rich as Rockefeller. Gold dust at my feet on the sunny side of the street. In the shade with those blues on parade, but now I'm not afraid, 'cause this rover crossed over. If I never have a cent, then I'll be rich as Rockefeller. Gold dust at my feet on the sunny side of the street.
Thanks, Becky. Thanks, Dave. That was great.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And Rebecca Kilgore and Dave Frischberg will perform more songs by Dorothy Fields later in the show. At the age of 30, Dorothy Fields became the first woman to win an Oscar for a song. The song was The Way You Look Tonight, with a melody by Jerome Kern. Deborah Grace Weiner wrote about the life and lyrics of Dorothy Fields in her 1997 biography, On the Sunny Side of the Street. I asked Weiner if there were other firsts that Fields could be credited with.
Yeah, she's really the only woman to have that kind of a major career. There were other women who were writing, but nobody had a sort of a sustained success. When Dorothy began writing, the whole idea of the flapper era and sort of sexual liberation that was going on for women, it was the first break with the Victorian idea of womanhood. And the fact that a lot of these songwriters, like Larry Hart, were writing these wonderful, racy, suggestive kind of lyrics was a new thing in itself. But the fact that Dorothy was doing it, too, as a woman, really made a big difference.
Dorothy Fields grew up in the vaudeville era. In fact, her father, Lou Fields, was a famous vaudeville comic and producer. What was he most famous for within vaudeville?
Lou Fields was most famous as half of the comedy team Weber and Fields that were famous for their slapstick routines and were actually credited with inventing the custard pie in the face and the joke that began, "Who was that lady I saw you with last night?" And the punchline, of course, was, "That was no lady, that was my wife."
So Dorothy Fields grew up with all these jokes around her.
Yeah, it was interesting, though, because Lou Fields and his wife, Rose, were very, very conscious that their children shouldn't be brought up in a show business setting because it was a really disreputable field to be in at the time.
Nevertheless, Dorothy Fields and two of her brothers went into showbiz, and she actually wrote several books for musicals with her brother, Herbert. And this is such an interesting show business family story. Dorothy and Herb Fields, they were friends with Rodgers and Hart. So I'm wondering how the Dorothy Fields generation of songwriters and her father Lou Fields and his generation, how they helped each other.
Well, Dorothy and Rodgers and Hart and Herb, there was a whole young set of these really smart, young, creative people who had come of age in the jazz age and really started to make musicals. Herb began collaborating with Rodgers and Hart. He wrote the librettos to all their early musicals. And Lou began to produce all the early Rodgers and Hart shows. And so what happened was, on one hand, it was Lou Fields who gave Rodgers and Hart their start. And on the other hand, it was Herb and the young generation who really gave Lou Fields a new lease on life.
Deborah, did having Lou Fields as a father make it any easier for Dorothy Fields to get into theater and songwriting?
Well, on the one hand, it did not, because her parents were really dead set against her going into the business at all. They were very intent on raising all their children as young ladies and gentlemen, particularly the girls. And Dorothy went to finishing school and led a kind of a sheltered life in that way. And when she began to be introduced around to the music publishing houses, he went so far as to use his influence to keep her from being hired. The thing was, though, the flip side of that was that once she was in, I think being Lou Fields' daughter opened a lot of doors. She was in a very privileged position as far as who the family friends were, who she was associating with. And again, being Herb Fields' sister and being in this group with Dick Rogers and Larry Hart and Oscar Hammerstein, I think that that really, really helped. I mean, she was in.
Will you tell the story in your biography of how Dorothy Fields got started in songwriting? She met J. Fred Coots, the songwriter who was probably best known for You Go to My Head and Santa Claus is Coming to Town, and he suggested that she try writing lyrics, and they did some songs together and then made the rounds of the music publishers trying to sell the songs. I'm going to let Dorothy Fields tell the story, and this story offers a great picture of what it took to get started and what the industry was like in the 1920s when she was starting out in songwriting. This is an excerpt of her appearance at the 92nd Street Y's Lyrics and Lyricists series in New York in 1972.
Now, Mills Music was a fast-working firm. In 1921, when Enrico Caruso died, overnight they had a song. They needed a songbird in heaven, so God took Caruso away. Then a few years later, they needed a new star in heaven, so God took Rudolph Valentino away. Well, 1924, I think it was, they figured that since Ruth Elder was going to fly the Atlantic, what else, a song? Irving Mills decided to give me a chance. What could they lose for $50? Mr. Mills said, "I'll give you the first two lines of the chorus, and we'll call it Our American Girl." These were the two lines. "You took a notion to fly across the ocean." I said timidly, but with great conviction, "Mr. Mills, you don't take a notion to fly across the ocean." But I wrote it overnight anyway. Ruth Elder never made it, and neither did my first song. Now, the Mills Music Company couldn't get rid of me. I became their $50 a night girl. For $50, I got 100 words.
Do you think that being a woman presented any obstacles to her when she was breaking in?
Again, that's a dual answer. Songwriters in those days would work on Tin Pan Alley, which was, of course, the kind of generic term for the business of music publishing. And so it was really a bunch of these cubicles with these kind of cigar-chomping kinds of guys pounding out hack tunes on the piano. Of course, there were some really talented people who began there too, but there were also a lot of hacks. And it was not a particularly elegant or genteel place for anybody, let alone for a young girl. However, once she was in, Dorothy didn't see herself as being discriminated against in any way. Not only did she not see herself as different, but her colleagues looked at her as an equal colleague.
Well, the manager at Mills Music, Jimmy McHugh, ended up being her songwriting partner, and together they wrote Sunny Side of the Street, Digga Digga Doo, I'm in the Mood for Love, Don't Blame Me. They started off writing songs for reviews that were that featured black performers, even though the composers of the songs and the writers of the material were white. Was that a pretty common setup then, that whites would be writing for black performers?
That was a very common setup at that time. A lot of these songwriters were, most of them were white Jewish songwriters. And so Gershwin's stuff, Harold Arlen's stuff, all these people were writing in the kind of black sort of bluesy idiom. And that was very exciting. And it was very much the fashion also. And it created a kind of a dual situation where at one time, with the hindsight of the post-civil rights era, it was discriminatory. And at the same time, this was giving genuine opportunity to black performers. Today, you'd look back at those shows, and we can say that none of those shows are going to be revived anytime soon. But at that time, it was very much of a big thing.
Dorothy Fields was famous for her very colloquial lyrics and sometimes suggestive lyrics. But there's a very funny story that she tells about her first show at the Cotton Club in the late 1920s. Duke Ellington was the orchestra that was performing. And, well, I'll let her tell the story. This is a story she told in 1972 when she was appearing at the 92nd Street Y's Lyrics and Lyricists series in New York.
At the Cotton Club, we had Duke Ellington. I think it was his first appearance in New York. The review was called Hot Chocolates, and there was a singer whose name I choose to forget. It was my first show, opening Sunday night. My whole family was there. Mom, Pop, my sister Frances, brother Herbert, brother Joe. And at our table was a good friend of my father, Walter Winchell. And the program read, Music, Jimmy McHugh, Lyrics, Dorothy Fields. And the family was very proud for a quick minute. Then Miss What's-Her-Name came on for her specialty. And did she sing the songs Jimmy McHugh and I wrote for her? She did not. She belted out three of the most shocking, ribald, bawdy, dirtiest songs anyone had ever heard in the 1920s. I looked at McHugh, McHugh looked at me. My father didn't look at my mother. My brothers and sister looked down at their plates, and nobody dared to look at Walter Winchell. My father said, you didn't learn those words home. I said, I didn't write those words. And Pop got up from the table and had a few choice things to say to the management. At his insistence, at intermission, they announced that McHugh and Fields did not write the songs for Miss Blank, Blank, Blank. The only comment my father made to me was, will you for God's sakes get out of show business?
There was Dorothy Fields as recorded in 1972, and my guest is her biographer, Deborah Grace Weiner. Deborah, what did it take for Dorothy Fields' father to recognize that her talent was really great and that he should support her career?
Well, the funny thing is that he really came to appreciate what she could do. I mean, for one thing, by the time she was 30, she won the Academy Award for The Way You Look Tonight. And he was tremendously proud of her for that. And, you know, the other thing was that she was wildly successful almost from the beginning. She started making a ton of money. When they wrote I Can't Give You Anything But Love, it was like the biggest, I mean, it was a number one chart record. And in an era when sheet music sales were the big thing, it was on every piano in America. Everybody played it on the ukulele. Everybody was singing it, you know, on the beach. And it was like, it was as hip as, you know, a Madonna song, you know, would be in these times.
Deborah Grace Winer is the author of On the Sunny Side of the Street, The Life and Lyrics of Dorothy Fields. Dave Frischberg and Rebecca Kilgore will perform some songs from Fields' early career when she was collaborating with Jimmy McHugh. That's after we take a short break. This is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. Our program today is dedicated to the life and lyrics of Dorothy Fields. Our guest performers are Dave Frischberg and Rebecca Kilgore. Frischberg certainly recognizes a great song. He's written plenty of his own. His songs include Peel Me a Grape, I'm Hip, My Attorney Bernie, and Heart's Desire. His songs have been recorded by Rosemary Clooney, Mel Torme, Diana Krall, and many other singers, and he's recorded his own songs on his many recordings. Rebecca Kilgore has a gift for finding great songs, and I love the way she sings them. She often performs with Frischberg in Portland, where they both live. He accompanies her on several of her albums, including Not a Care in the World and I Saw Stars. Well, Dave, Becky, why don't you do one of Dorothy Fields, actually her first hit. It was her first hit, I Can't Give You Anything But Love, which, like The Sunny Side of the Street, has music by Jimmy McHugh. This song caught on after it was featured in the review Lou Leslie's Blackbirds of 1928. Maybe you can do the verse for us also.
Okay.
Gee, but it's tough to be broke, kid. It's not a joke, kid. It's a curse. My luck is changing. It's gotten from simply rotten to something worse. Who knows, someday I will win too. I'll begin to reach my prime. Now, though I see what our end is, all I can spend is just my time. Oh, I can't give you anything but love, baby. That's the only thing I've plenty of, baby. Dream a while, scheme a while, we're sure to find happiness. And I guess all those things that you've always pined for. Gee, I'd love to see you looking swell, baby. Diamond bracelets, Woolworths doesn't sell, baby. Till that lucky day, you know darn well, baby, I can't give you anything but
song was written, I think, about a year before the Depression, and obviously had particular resonance when the Depression hit shortly after. Becky, do you find Dorothy Fields' lyrics particularly singable because they're so colloquial? You take a line like, gee, I'd like to see you looking swell.
See, I can get into a lyric like that. I love that. I'm not embarrassed to say that. Some corny lyrics I am, but this it just sounds, like you say, colloquial, and it's fun to say.
There's another song I'd like you to do that's from the same review that I Can't Give You Anything But Love is from, and this song is called I Must Have That Man. Sammy Kahn, the lyricist, called this lyric a perfect lyric. Dave Frischberg is someone who writes great lyrics. Is there anything that you particularly like about this lyric that you'd like to point out to us?
Oh, I don't know if it's a perfect lyric, but it's awfully good. The first thing I remember about it is I always think of Ethel Waters' version of this, which I listen to a lot, from the soundtrack of Blackbirds. And I love the way Dorothy Fields wrote that certain line, "He's hot as Hades, a lady's not safe in his arms when she's kissed." As that's what Ethel Waters does.
That's great. Would you do the song for us?
I'm so unhappy, left all alone. Ain't got nobody to love now. The man I long for is not so strong for me. He's not an angel, but I don't care. Perhaps a change will come someday. Whatever he is, I want to be his way. Don't want my mammy, don't need a friend. My heart is broken, it won't ever mend. I ain't much caring just where I will end. I must have that man. I'm like an oven that's crying for heat. He treats me awful each time that we meet. It's just unlawful how that boy can cheat. But I must have that man. He's hot as Hades, a lady's not safe in his arms when she's kissed. But I'm afraid that he's cool enough. Maybe I'm rule off his list. I'll never be missed. I need that person much worse than just bad. I'm half alive. He's driving me mad. He's only human if he's to be had. But I must have that man.
That's Becky Kilgore with Dave Frischberg at the piano. They'll be back to perform more songs by Dorothy Fields later in the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
This special edition of Fresh Air, one in a six-part series on American popular song, has been made possible by a major grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities. For more than 30 years, expanding America's understanding of who we were, who we are, and who we will be. Funding for Fresh Air is provided by Barnes & Noble Booksellers and the Discover Great New Writers Program, which features the literary voices of tomorrow today. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Nothing's impossible I have found, for when my chin is on the ground, I pick myself up, dust myself off, and start all over again. Can't lose my...
Coming up, we continue our tribute to Dorothy Fields. We'll discuss her lyrics with a song historian, meet her last songwriting partner, and Dave Frischberg and Rebecca Kilgore will perform more of Fields' songs. They have a new CD called The Starlit Hour. We're listening to Fred Astaire singing Fields' song, Pick Yourself Up.
When I remember the famous men who had to fall to rise again, I take a deep breath, pick myself up, dust myself off, and start all over again.
Well,
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross.
I'm in the mood for love, simply because you're near me. Oh, funny when you're near me. I'm in the mood for love, baby.
That's Louis Armstrong singing the Dorothy Fields, Jimmy McHugh song, I'm in the Mood for Love. Our program today is devoted to lyricist Dorothy Fields. It's part of our series on American popular song. Dorothy Fields is one of the lyricists that my guest Philip Furia writes about in his book The Poets of Tin Pan Alley. His latest book is a biography of Irving Berlin, and he's at work on a biography of songwriter Johnny Mercer. Philip Furia, what were Dorothy Fields' trademarks as a lyricist?
I think of any lyricist who wrote in that time, she was probably the most vernacular. She had a real ear for the American colloquial language and could take an everyday phrase that has no romantic connotations at all, like, don't blame me, and turn it into a love song. Don't blame me for falling in love with you. Or, I'm in the mood for love. It sounds like something like, I'm in the mood for Chinese food tonight. And she takes that phrase and, again, turns it into a romantic song.
And what do you think was distinctive about her rhyming?
She could rhyme in a very elegant way, a very literate way, as well as a very slangy way. She could create intricate rhymes like, a fine romance, my dear, this is a fine romance with no kisses. And yet she could rhyme so quietly you could barely hear it. She could take a line like, with your smile so warm, there is nothing for me but to love you. You can barely hear that rhyme. So it could be jazzy and flashy, but it could be so very, very subtle as well.
Now, Dorothy Fields wrote lyrics for revues, for Broadway musicals, for movie musicals, and she was among that first group of songwriters who moved from Broadway to Hollywood in 1929, right after the invention of talking pictures. And she had to adjust to some of the early movie musical conventions. And I want to play you an example from an interview that she recorded in the 60s about one of the conventions she had to adjust to. This interview is now part of the Columbia Oral History Project archive.
They felt in those days that you could not square, shall we say, music in a picture unless you saw an instrument playing the music. You see, this was 1929, and there hadn't been many musical pictures. And I remember so well, there was a picture we did called Love in the Rough, and every time we did a song, it was a golf story, by the way, and every time we did a song, the caddies had harmonicas, you see, and they would accompany behind the bushes the love song, and then the music would creep in. But they felt it imperative to have some kind of instrument on the set so that people would know where the music was coming from. Now, of course, they gave all that up.
Philip Furia, does that ring true to you?
Yes. When sound movies came in, it was a real boon for songwriters because suddenly in the Depression there was work out in Hollywood. You can go out and write songs for movies. But it was also, as Dorothy Fields would say, a curse because movies were such a realistic medium that the last thing Hollywood producers would tolerate is characters bursting into song without some excuse to sing, or audiences wondering, where's the movie music coming from? I don't see it on the screen. So that realism really worked against songwriters in the early years of musicals because producers simply wanted, you know, absolute authentic realism in why people were singing.
Dorothy Fields wrote several movie musicals with Jerome Kern, and one of the wonderful ones is Swing Time, a musical that starred Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers. And some of the songs from that are The Way You Look Tonight, A Fine Romance, Pick Yourself Up. Now, Dorothy Fields' first partner was Jimmy McHugh, and he was a Tin Pan Alley guy and wrote a lot of jazz-oriented tunes. Jerome Kern came more from the world of operetta. What do you think Kern and Fields brought out in each other?
Oh, it was a wonderful kind of sweet and sour combination because Kern wrote a very high and classical musical line. And Dorothy Fields had come up from the Cotton Club, and she wrote a very slangy, vernacular-style lyric. So I think it, in some ways you have the best combination when you have opposites working together, and you get a kind of magic in the song that I don't think she had in her early work with Jimmy McHugh. If you think of a lyric, Kern would write a beautiful melody, and she would pay partial tribute to it in a song like Never Gonna Dance, by saying, La Belle, but then follow that with a swell romance, La Belle, La Perfectly Swell romance. So it's that combination of high and low, of elegance and yet earthiness.
Now, she wrote a song for Fred Astaire called I Won't Dance.
Yes, wonderful song.
The melody came from an earlier show that that Jerome Kern had done with Oscar Hammerstein, and Hammerstein had written the original lyric to it. And I think the story goes, you tell a story.
It was for a British musical called Three Sisters in the early 30s, and Hammerstein and Kern wrote a song called I Won't Dance. It was not a very good song lyrically, but writing a song about dancing was very hard to do. You know, I won't dance, I can't dance, I don't feel like dancing. It's a form that wears out pretty quickly. And Oscar Hammerstein had an idea, and he said, well, I won't dance because I'm not a very good dancer. And that was the point of the song. Dorothy Fields got it in Hollywood and was told to set a new lyric to it. And she came up with a much sexier lyric. I won't dance because when I put my arms around you, the last thing I want to do is dance. And she had that wonderful line, for heavens rest us, I'm not asbestos. It's a very torrid kind of love song. And she really spiced up what had been a fairly banal love song before that.
Now she writes, they say that music leads the way to romance, so if I hold you in my arms, I won't dance.
I won't dance.
Yeah.
And you can leave it to your imagination what else that she would do.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite of Dorothy Fields' lyrics?
Boy, that's a tough one. I suppose that I would have to say A Fine Romance, because it shows Dorothy Fields being something I think that she was better at than any other lyricist. She could be coyly suggestive in a song. She was, I think, more comfortable than other lyricists, most of whom were men, handling sexuality in songs. And maybe that women are just more comfortable talking about sex than men are. But whenever Dorothy Fields drops a line like, I never must the crease in your blue serge pants, I never had the chance, there's a kind of eroticism there that when Cole Porter does it or Ira Gershwin or Larry Hart, it always seems a little strained, like they're trying to be naughty. But when Dorothy Fields makes an erotic image or allusion, there's something very relaxed about it and very ladylike.
Well, great. We'll be hearing A Fine Romance sung for us by Becky Kilgore with Dave Frischberg at the piano in just a minute. Philip Furia, thank you so much for talking with us about the lyrics of Dorothy Fields.
Oh, thank you for letting me.
And Philip Furia is the author of a book about lyricists called The Poets of Tin Pan Alley. He's also the author of a biography of Irving Berlin. We'll be back after a break. This is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. Dave Frischberg and Becky Kilgore are back to perform more songs with lyrics by Dorothy Fields. You know, Philip Furia said his favorite Dorothy Fields lyric is A Fine Romance, and I'm wondering if it's your favorite or one of your favorites, too.
I think I'd have to say it's my favorite, too, yeah. But that's before I heard Furia said it, too.
Becky, are you particularly fond of this one?
I'm particularly fond of it. I don't know if it's my favorite, but it's certainly got some clever, very hip things to say.
Well, this song is one of the few times that Dorothy Fields wrote a lyric before actually getting the music for a song. The music for this one was written by Jerome Kern. Would you sing a couple of your favorite choruses?
Sure.
You bet.
A fine romance with no kisses. A fine romance, my friend. This is... We should be like a couple of hot tomatoes, but you're as cold as yesterday's mashed potatoes. A fine romance, you won't nestle. A fine romance, you won't wrestle. I might as well play bridge with my old maid aunts. I haven't got a chance. This is a fine romance.
A fine romance, my good fellow. You take romance, I'll take jello. You're calmer than the seals in the earth. ocean. At least they flap their fins to express emotion. A fine romance with no quarrels, with no insults and all morals. I've never mussed the crease in your blue serge pants. I never get the chance. This is a fine romance.
A fine romance, my dear Duchess. Two old fogies who need crutches. True love should have the thrills that a healthy crime has. We don't have half the thrills that the march of time has. A fine romance, my good woman, my strong, aged in the wood woman. You never gave the orchids I sent a glance. You prefer cactus plants. This is a fine romance, romance. This is a fine romance. Am I out of line? Or is this a fine romance?
I love your duet on that. That's terrific.
That's fun.
Thanks for doing that. Well, that song, A Fine Romance, was actually originally done as a duet by Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers in the 1936 film Swing Time. In a 1935 film called Roberta, Fred Astaire sang a song called I Won't Dance. Now, I Won't Dance had an earlier life in a show that was written by Jerome Kern and Oscar Hammerstein called Three Sisters. And when it came time to do Roberta, they wanted to use the melody of I Won't Dance for the movie, but they didn't like the lyrics, so they wanted a new lyric, and they asked Dorothy Fields to write something jazzier, and she sure did. We managed to get our hands on the original Oscar Hammerstein lyric, and I'd love it if you could compare the two lyrics for us, the Hammerstein and the Dorothy Fields. How about an excerpt of each, starting with the Hammerstein?
Yeah,
okay,
we can
goes.
We can do that.
I won't dance, don't ask me. I won't dance. Don't ask me, I won't dance. Don't ask me to. I'm fond of dancing, but I won't dance with you. Dancing as an exercise may do good. I've no doubt it's doing quite a few good. Though I know your partners, I'll call you good. For me, you're too good to do good.
Well, those were the lyrics by Oscar Hammerstein, and these are the ones by Dorothy Fields, more well known to us.
I won't dance, don't ask me. I won't dance, don't ask me. I won't dance, monsieur, with you. My heart won't let my feet do things they should do. You know what? You're handsome, you know what? You're handsome, but oh, what you do to me? I'm like an ocean wave that's bumped on the shore. I feel so absolutely stumped on the floor. Now when you dance, you're charming and you're gentle. Especially when you do the continental. But this feeling isn't purely mental. For heaven rest us, I'm not asbestos. So that's why I won't dance. Why should I? I won't dance. How could I? I won't dance. Merci beaucoup. I know that music leads the way to romance. So if I hold you in my arms, I won't dance.
That's great. That's Rebecca Kilgore and Dave Frischberg. Okay, let's put this to a vote. I say that Dorothy Fields is definitely the superior lyric.
I'd have to agree with you on that.
Dave?
Me too.
Okay. Three against nobody, I guess. How about a Dorothy Fields ballad? I'm going to ask you to do Don't Blame Me. The music is by Jimmy McHugh. This has one of those great Dorothy Fields internal rhymes in it. I'm under your spell, but how can I help it? I like that.
Oh, well, she honored that internal rhyme all through the song. She uses it at the beginning. How can I conceal the thrill that I'm feeling? And then later on, she says, the charms, all those charms that melt in my arms. So she honored it all the way.
Would you do the whole song for us?
Sure.
Okay.
Don't blame me for falling in love with you. I'm under your spell, but how can I help it? Don't blame me. Can't you see when you do the things you do? If I can't conceal the thrill that I'm feeling, don't blame me. I can't help it if that doggone moon above someone like you to love. Blame your kiss as sweet as a kiss can be, and blame all your charms that melt in my arms. But don't blame me.
That was beautiful. Rebecca Kilgore and Dave Frischberg. You know, Dorothy Field's trademark as a lyricist is her cleverness, but she could also write really tender lyrics, and I think this song really proves that. This is The Way You Look Tonight, a ballad that she wrote with Jerome Kern. It won an Academy Award. It was written for the Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers film Swing Time. And, you know, Dorothy Field said that the first time Jerome Kern played her the melody, when right before she wrote the lyric for it, she thought it was so beautiful that she started to cry and she had to leave the room. Would you do the song for us?
Sure.
Someday, when I'm awfully low, when the world is cold, I will feel a glow just thinking of. And the way you look tonight. Oh, but you're lovely with your smile so warm and your cheeks so soft. There is nothing for me but to love. Just the way you look tonight. With each word, your tenderness grows, tearing my fear apart. And that laugh that wrinkles your nose touches my foolish heart. Lovely, never, never change. Keep that breathless charm. Won't you please arrange it? 'Cause I love just the way you look tonight.
just the way you look tonight.
That was beautiful. I want to thank you both for performing songs by Dorothy Fields for us. It's really been a pleasure.
Thanks. It's been a pleasure for us.
Thanks, Jerry.
Becky Kilgore and Dave Frischberg. They each live in Portland, where they've performed together. They've recorded several CDs together, including Not a Care in the World and their latest, The Starlit Hour. Dave Frischberg has many albums on which he performs his own great songs, including Dave Frischberg by himself on Arbors, and Classics, which is on the Concord label. Coming up, composer Cy Coleman talks about collaborating with Dorothy Fields. This is Fresh Air. Dorothy Fields had one of her biggest Broadway hits in 1966.
The minute you walked in the joint, I could see you were a man of distinction, a real big spender.
Sweet Charity was about a dance hall hostess looking for real love. The two big hits of the show were this song, Big Spender, and If My Friends Could See Me Now. Dorothy Fields wrote the lyrics, Cy Coleman did the music. Coleman and Fields also wrote the songs for the musical Seesaw, which opened on Broadway in 1973, exactly 1 year before Fields died of a stroke at the age of 69. When we caught up with Cy Coleman, he was hard at work on his musical Exactly Like You, but he was happy to spend a few minutes talking about Dorothy Fields. Dorothy Fields had an uncanny ear for putting colloquialisms and the expressions of the day into her songs. How does she keep up with it? You know, most people after a certain age just don't keep up with the slang of the day.
Well, I don't think that she was living it. In other words, what it was is she wasn't calling up her friends and using the colloquialisms of the day, let's say, right? But she was very aware of speech patterns and how they change and what words were used and what they mean at different times. So she would make calls, and she would call younger people, and she would find out what's going on. And then she would, when she fully understood exactly what they were saying, then she would integrate it in her lyric. She was a professional. I mean, professionals in other fields do research. That's what she did.
Now, you and Dorothy Fields had a huge hit with Sweet Charity. What was her working style? What can you tell us about how she wrote?
Well, I do know this, is that we would get together and we would discuss what we were going to write. And I would get the feeling in the music. She liked that. She liked generally to get the melodic input first. Very often I would take, you know, her lyrics first, because it was, if it was a comedy song, it usually was easier, because you don't have to be stuck with the rhyming patterns, you know, with my musical patterns and trying to make jokes at the same time. But in any case, we were quite different, because when I first got started, I was a musician. I had my own group and everything else, and I used to stay up late at night. And so I'd get up late in the morning. Dorothy got up at the crack of dawn, and evidently she took out her card table, set it up, and sharpened her pencils, and started to work. By 8 o'clock or 8:30, she had a lyric. And then she'd want to call me. And it was very funny, because I just would, 8:30 in the morning, I was hardly functioning. And so I tell her, Dorothy, you can't call me. We'd go through this argument for a long time, and finally I shut off my phone, but it was so hurtful to her that I decided to open it up. But she would be very fast. As a matter of fact, she told me that Harold Arlen used to call her Speedy. And when she got that, she would just work, and she'd finish it off by 8:30 in the morning, and it usually was wonderful.
We're going to end our tribute to Dorothy Fields with a duet that you and she recorded of a song that you co-wrote together for Sweet Charity, If My Friends Could See Me Now. Would you tell us something about this song?
Well, If My Friends Could See Me Now not only worked perfectly for the show, but it seemed to transcend the show, as a lot of songs that, when they're well-written, do. And it's constantly performed. So the thought, If My Friends Could See Me Now, is one that is universal. And I think that Dorothy really caught the spirit of what people really kind of like feel when they're celebrating something. And they feel that they want their friends to see it.
Cy Coleman, thank you very much.
Sure.
If they could see me now, that little gang of mine, I'm eating fancy chow and drinking fancy wine. I'd like those stumble bums to see for a fact the kind of top drawer, first-rate chums I attract. All I can say is, wow, we look where I am. Tonight I landed pow right in a pot of jam. What a step up! Holy cow, they'd never believe it if my friends could see me now.
Dorothy Fields with Cy Coleman at the piano, recorded in 1972 during her presentation at the New York 92nd Street Y's Lyrics and Lyricists series. That presentation has been released on the CD An Evening with Dorothy Fields on DRG Records. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our series on American Popular Song is produced in collaboration with Margaret Pick and the Pacific Vista Productions team, including Terry Bronson. The series' associate producer is Anne-Marie Baldonado. Our performers today were pianist Dave Frischberg and singer Rebecca Kilgore. Their session was recorded by Jim Zack at NOLA Studios in New York. Joyce Lieberman is the technical supervisor for our series. Additional engineering help from Bob Hurdick and Audrey Bentham. Our thanks to David Lahm and the estate of Dorothy Fields, the Columbia University Oral History Project, Joan Franklin of Cinema Sound, Hugh Forden of DRG Records, Dwight Blocker Bowers of the Smithsonian Institution, Jim Steinblatt of ASCAP, Stephen Davis of the UCLA Music Library, and Virginia Field of the National Endowment for the Humanities. I'm Terry Gross.
This special edition of Fresh Air, one in a six-part series on American popular song, has been made possible by a major grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities. For more than 30 years, expanding America's understanding of who we were, who we are, and who we will be. Support for Fresh Air comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced, and from Universal Pictures, presenting A Beautiful Mind, starring Russell Crowe and directed by Ron Howard, now in select cities, in theaters nationwide January 4th. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Here and I'm here, so what do we care? The time and
on the next Fresh Air, the encore presentation of our series on American popular song continues with the early theater songs of Jerome Kern, the songs he wrote before such hits as Smoke It's in Your Eyes and The Way You Look Tonight. I'm Terry Gross. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
Yours and mine. The skies are fair everywhere, and the sun seems to shine. And now the